Bridgeport 89.5 FM and online at WPKN.org.
Stay tuned for the Organic Farm Stand coming right up.
Corn in the field, and listen to the rice when the wind blows across the water. King harvest is surely come. I work for the union, 'cause she's so good to me. And I'm bound to come out on top. That's where she said I should be. I will hear every word the boss may say, for he's the one who hands me down that day. Looks like this time I'm gonna get to stay. I'm a union man now all the way.
The smell of the leaves from the magnolia trees in the meadow. Harvest is surely come.
A dry summer then come fall.
All right, welcome to the Organic Farm Stand, which comes to you the first and third Thursday of each month. My name is Richard Hill, here with Chris Ferriero. Great to see you.
It's been a few months, but nice to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. And Steve Munno from Massara Farm. He's executive director. And Steve, how's it going out there on the farm today?
It's going well. It's windy and cold, but it's sunny, so we're grateful for that.
Yeah, we're going to talk to you a little bit about this somewhat drastic shift in the weather and what effect that might have on some folks whose maybe some of their fruit shrubs have begun to bud. And I know peach trees are always a problem at this time of year when they might bloom or start to bud early. And we'll get to that when the Small Farmers Report comes up in just a minute. In the meantime, I do want to ask you, Steve, to focus in some detail on the winter conference, which is coming this weekend. Before I do that, however, I want to just check in with Chris. Chris, I know you moved to Hamden. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And how's life there going for you?
It's going okay. I have to make some adjustments because there is garden space, but it hasn't been gardened for a long time, so I have to talk to my landlord. I stuck a shovel in there in the fall and didn't go in very far. I think we're talking tree roots.
Tree roots.
And so I thought maybe doing a raised bed, something like that. But actually, I wanted, because today is the spring solstice, right? Today is the first day of spring?
No, we tried to make that happen. Actually, it was 2 days ago. I tried to get it changed.
Oh.
I spoke to a few people that I know in high places. And in fact, Steve, I'm a little disappointed that you couldn't get us to have the spring solstice occur on this show date. Did you try? Did you even try, Steve?
I tried. So, but the thing is, this was also a leap year. So we had an extra day. So for this spring equinox coming a little bit earlier, you know, we do often think about the 20th or the 21st, sometimes the 22nd, but the 19th, it was actually the equinox. And that's about as early as it's been, but in part because we had an extra day there in February. So these things coincide and pushed it a little bit earlier. But it doesn't feel yet like spring right now. I mean, last week felt more like spring. So, you know, maybe our requests got a little bit mixed up. So we had a bit of spring last week, and now we're back into more of a winter zone.
Yeah. We have to know who to call on this one to change the solstice date.
I don't recall it ever being on the 19th. It's usually the 20th or 21st, it seems.
Yeah, that's what I remember. But just about getting back to Chris for a minute here. Have you discovered any, you know, areas to hike and other maybe community garden spaces in Hamden?
There is a community garden. I believe there's only one, and it's at a community center. I can't remember the name of the facility, but it seems to be the only community garden. And it only, when I went there, there are only like three or four raised beds there, which kind of surprised me. For the whole town of Hamden, It's a pretty diverse community, you know, city, country, farm, and yeah.
I bet if you do a real search, you'll find other spaces. I mean, I know there's Edgerton Park, as some people like to say.
Oh, in New Haven, okay.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's, as you say, in New Haven, but not too far yeah. down the road from you. I'm not sure if, you know, that's pretty competitive to get space there, but they have a large community garden there.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking of, I am like a 5-minute walk from the Farmington Canal Rail Trail.
Nice.
Which is convenient, you know. And that goes, I'm not even sure, I know it starts down by Yale. It goes up to, where's Hubbard Park? In Meriden. And I think it's not continuous. I think there's a few splits, but yeah. it actually ends up, I believe, up by Hartford, by West Hartford.
I think you're right. And it's actually, a friend of mine was walking on it in Cheshire last week, and there's some really nice, I don't know if they're tributaries to the Farmington River. Steve, do you happen to know about that whether the river runs along that trail, and if so, which river it might be?
Well, it's a long trail, and I think we cross a few bits of water throughout, because I think when you're coming into New Haven, I believe you're getting into West River there, but so I don't know, and I need to look at a map. And I know that there's been some expansion of the trail recently. You know, part of this is connecting towns and places. So it's developed over a number of years, and there's still work to be done. So I think we're trying to get to the coast, and then you can also, you know, maybe get all the way up to Northampton, Massachusetts. I think that's part of the design of the trail.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
And there's a section near me. I think it might be, it's possible, part of the Quinnipiac River. I think that might go along at some point.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, too. We actually had somebody on years ago who talked about, I forget what it's called, it's sort of a way of looking at the area that one lives in, not as, you know, these kind of boundaries, you know, between Hampden, New Haven, and West Haven, North Haven, etc., but to look at them more as regional spaces, and look at where all the water sources are and the topography, and to create a new sort of perspective on the geography and that in which one goes about one's business. And it's a very, very interesting way of doing things. And I think that we'd be very surprised to know how much water runs through our land. Any water sources up there, Steve, that you want to share with us? I know I'm a big swimmer, so I'll if you give me 6 inches of water, I will find a way to swim in it. But what's the water story up there?
Well, you know, with the rains that we had previously, the water was higher than ever. You know, so there was, you know, in our woods here, which I believe you've walked through, you know, there's a bunch of small streams that are somewhat easily crossable. But after the storm from last weekend, it was harder to cross. It was, you know, water was up everywhere. Unfortunately, a lot of the waters around here in Woodbridge, and also through a lot of Connecticut, are reservoir areas. So you're not really supposed to go in and swim. Right. There are, of course, places where people do that, around the area that are accessible, but a lot of the waters are, you know, in water supply territory and are not meant for swimming.
Yeah.
But, you know, the way that we've had so much rain over the last year, a lot of the rivers and streams and tributaries and, you know, little wetland areas, the water has been up and the streams have been much more lively than normal. So, you know, there are places where you can certainly wade and get in where you know, in other years when it's been dry, would not be possible.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's amazing amount of rain that we've had in New England over the past couple of months. And we should probably talk about that issue. You know, some areas of the country are so dry, others are, you know, you wonder whether, I wish we could, you know, ship our water someplace, you know, because we have too much of it. I have like standing water in my backyard a lot of times in the past month. But let's move on to talking a little bit about the winter conference. Steve, you should really just let it all hang out. Tell us everything you want to tell us about the conference. It is probably not too late to register, I would think.
That's true. So, yeah, so we are approaching the in-person Connecticut NOFA Winter Conference, which is this Saturday, March 23rd, at Eastern Connecticut State University in Willimantic. The keynote speaker is Maya Van Rossum. She's the founder of the Green Amendments for the Generations, which is a nonprofit dedicated to securing constitutional recognition and protection of environmental rights in every state. And our own Dr. Kim Stoner from Connecticut NOFA has been working on that effort, among others, to bring that forward in the state of Connecticut. So that's our keynote, Maya Van Rossum. We've also had virtual workshops throughout the day yesterday and today, which are being recorded and will be available later. So Saturday, though, we've got a full day of workshops at Eastern Connecticut State. Tickets are limited, though. So as of yesterday, we only had about 15 tickets remaining. So if you are hoping to go, intending to go, this is your moment. So please, you can go to ctnofa.org. That's ctnofa.org, and you can click on the Winter Conference and purchase tickets for that. So, but yeah, there will be a number of things going on at the program. In addition to the keynote speaker, there'll be workshops throughout the morning and afternoon. There will be a soil health table that I believe Monique Bosch will be tabling. There will be videos showing soil samples from local farmers. So, you know, look under a microscope at soils and see all the active life under there. Yeah, there's a number of great workshops. This is, you know, always a favorite for me because it's an opportunity to learn and connect with folks. We also have a vendor fair, so a number of our great vendors throughout the state and service providers will be there providing information about the work that they do and the resources that they can make available. This morning I did a workshop on, you know, all the grants and fundings that are available through our service provider agencies, like the Natural Resource Conservation Service, the Connecticut Department of Agriculture, Farm Service Agency, UConn Extension. So there's a number of things happening throughout the day. We'll of course be having workshops about climate change and how to adapt, how to do things with minimal tillage. There's a workshop on sustainable hemp. We've got workshops for beginning farmers. We've got medicinal herbs, farm fire safety. Just there's a whole number of things going on throughout the day. So it's really, you know, for gardeners, for farmers, for food enthusiasts, I'd say it's a great time to come. So, and we're really excited to be partnering with Eastern Connecticut State for the first time. They've got a great sustainability department there, and so I think this is going to be really fun.
Wow, it sounds amazing. And, you know, I'm not sure. Chris, did you have a question?
Oh, sure. Actually, Steve, I haven't been to NOFA conference in a while. So since COVID, I noticed like yesterday and today there are virtual workshops. But since COVID, has it the in-person attendance increased a lot?
Yes, we've had good in-person attendance, you know, and it's been, you know, you hate to say that there was, you know, advantages from COVID, but, you know, I guess some silver linings that have come out from it is being able to do these virtual conferences, which really allow us to do a lot more. So there's only so many workshops we can fit in an in-person conference in a day. There's only so many rooms, and then you end up with the sort of challenge of which one to go to at which hour. And doing these virtual allows, you know, a little bit more room for attendance, And also, you know, to do these recordings to make them available, you know, for a longer period of time. So it's not just the in-person experience and the live experience. You can also refer to some of these resources and watch them later. So if you feel like you missed out on some of the workshops yesterday or today that are virtual, you know, after the conference, usually within a couple of weeks, the recordings get made available, you know, and are available for a period of time. So, yes, we've had a few great in-person conferences, you know, since COVID, and we're glad to see these numbers picking up again and that there's really interest in people getting to get together, you know, sharing these knowledge, their knowledge and resources. So, yeah, we're excited.
That's fantastic. So, and just one more time, it's ctnofa.org. That's ctnofa.org, a wonderful website, and will lead you directly to the ability to register for the winter conference and grab one of those 15 tickets remaining. And that will be very, you'll be very disappointed if you don't get one. So get on, right on over there. Steve, I wanted to ask you, as we move into the Small Farms Report, you mentioned that you now have a new farm manager and that sounds pretty exciting, you know, new blood, new energy on the farm there. Tell us a little bit about that transition and also just how you're coping with this radical shift in weather that we've had.
Yeah, well, so you know, our farm has always relied on an amazing team and our farm staff. And one of our farm staff, Mary Claire Whelan, MC, we have recently, you know, moved her into the position of farm manager. She's been here with us for 5+ years. She's also helped run the New Connecticut Farmer Alliance over the last few years as a coordinator there. She's just been an incredible asset for the farm. She's really talented and really, I think, eager to, you know, keep growing this farm. And I'm really grateful to her and our team. So, you know, it allows me to shift my role a little bit. Last year, Katie Poole, who had been with us for a number of years as executive director and really did an amazing job growing our programs and events, you know, she stepped away. And so over the last year, we kind of shifted roles within our team, and which we were ready for, which is a nice thing. We've had staff who've been with us for a long time, both on our program side and on our farm staff. So it's just been a little bit of a shift. And for me, I'll still have my hands in the soil. I'll still be working with the farm crew, but I'll also be, you know, focused on some of our programs and some of our events and some of our development work. So it's a nice shift for me. And it's really, you know, a great thing for me to sort of hand things over to a really talented team that we have to run the day-to-day operations.
Wonderful. So, and tell us what's been going on the farm. So just to clarify, so will you literally be stepping away from actual farming duties, or are you just going to be doing administrative stuff? Are you going to have your hands in the dirt or not?
Yeah, I will still have my hands in the soil. I don't think I'm, at least at this point in my life, ready to not be doing farm work. You know, when we started, so we're now entering our 15th year, and initially it was just me and our board of directors and some volunteers and a small staff, and we sort of needed to get things up and running. And I think Katie coming in a few years, we were able to really grow things together. And this is just a shift for me. I'll still be doing a lot of the tractor work. I'll still be you know, out in the field, but I will also spend a good bit of my time on events and programs and development. So it's just a little shift with me doing less in the field and allowing people who are ready and able to take over, you know, the operations for them to do that. So I think it's a nice thing in sort of having a succession plan. Excuse me. I think for any farm, you need to be able to move things on from one person to the next and to, you know, have them bring in their energy and their ideas and their skills. So, you know, I've leaned on my team here over the years, and I'm really glad for them to be taking over with MC kind of leading the way as farm manager.
Wonderful. And just a reminder, by the way, that we are minutes away from our special guest today, who will be Caitlin Kimball, who is the Director of Agriculture at City Seed in New Haven. That's the organization that administers all the farmers markets that take place in the New Haven environs there. And we're going to focus today, I believe, on the Worcester Square Market, which is opening on April 6th. Am I right about that, Steve?
I think that is right. We're nearing our last winter market on Saturday the 30th. So it would be the that next Saturday in April would be the sort of start of the spring spring market there. So, and we are doing harvest. You know, we will still have, you know, kale, collards. I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago, we just started to see the flowering of our collards in the high tunnel. So we have our overwintered greens that we've been harvesting, you know, for the markets with City Seed and for our farm stand. So they're at the stage in life where they are ready to sort of procreate. That's all the plants we plant, you know, want to eventually flower, you know, or fruit so they can spread their seed. And that's where we're at with our collards and our kale. We have a few different varieties of kale, and they kind of have a sequence in which they go to flower. So we've just seen, you know, a green variety just throw up the first few flowers. And what that looks like, if you're wondering, the kale and collards are really closely related to broccoli. And so they end up, the kale and collards make a little floret, like a little broccolini. And so from that center stem, like sort of in the middle of where your kale or collard plant is, it'll start to shoot up that flower, and the plant sort of puts its energy all towards flowering. What we do is we pinch those off, and we can bunch them and sort of sell them as little sort of broccolini or little kale florets or collard florets. They're totally edible and usable, just like broccolini, and it keeps us harvesting the leaves as long as possible. If you let it go to flower, you know, that's where it's going to put all its energy. It's going to take the energy away from the leaves. Picking off those florets will only give us, you know, another week or two of harvest, but we want to extend that as much as possible because we're in this portion of the season now where we're starting things in the greenhouse and we haven't yet planted much, we haven't planted anything outside. And we're just doing our first new plantings in our tunnels, in our protected spaces. But they won't be ready for, you know, 6, 8, 10 weeks. So we're trying to maximize our winter harvest and keep that extended as long as we can over the next few weeks. So you'll see us, if you're at the markets or at the farm stand, you'll see, you know, in addition to our bunches of kale, you might see some bunches of the florets, which we'll call like sort of like the broccolini. And we're on the last couple beds of our carrots. We've got some arugula and salad mix coming up. We also have some overwintered parsley and cilantro, which is just coming ready to harvest, which is nice. You might be surprised to hear that they're cold hardy, but we planted those in sort of late summer, and they're just sizing up now where we can make little bunches of them. And out in the field that we haven't done any planting yet, our garlic has all started to come through. So garlic is looking good. It sort of popped through our leaf mulch, which is nice. And then, you know, though we don't have much for fruit trees, we have a few apple trees here. Our willows are in full bloom. And we're just starting to see some of the things we don't love as much, like the multiflora rose and barberry, start to leaf out in our woods. I'll be more excited to see the other trees. You know, I'm starting to see little bits of swollen buds here and there, little bits of red, little bits of white on the tips of the trees. So we'll start seeing some more things in bloom soon. That warm week we had last week, I think, pushed some things along. And that's what you were alluding to, Richard, the danger for peach trees and such. It's, you know, and it's sort of lovely to have those warm weeks in March where it's 60 degrees and it feels like a relief from winter. But the danger is that, you know, can push some of the blossoms on some of our more frost sensitive crops, tree crops particularly. And then you get a week like this where it's cold and windy, and we're going to see nights in the low 20s, you know, tonight, and we did last night in the mid 20s. You know, that could wipe out a whole crop, particularly in something like peaches, or if anybody has plums or apricots. You know, it's not a reliable crop here, unfortunately, and these are the sort of climate and weather risks that they face.
Yeah, and just to remind folks, Steve is the executive director of Massaro Farm, which is at 41 Ford Road in Woodbridge, and that is a – one second. Hold on. One second. All right, thank you. So, and that is a nonprofit operation, a CSA that has been really big, plays a major role in the community with all kinds of special events and stuff for kids, stuff for adults, community dinners, all sorts of wonderful stuff. So Massara Farm, I believe it's massarafarm.org, Steve, for the website?
That's right. Yeah.
Very good. So folks should really check out that farm if you're anywhere near Woodbridge. And the Friday farm stand is up and running, I believe, still will continue. And what are the hours of that, Steve?
Yeah, we've been doing alternate Friday. So we're not open this Friday, but we'll be open next Friday again. And that's from 12 to 5 on Friday afternoons. And we'll do that as long as we continue to have stuff to harvest. So sort of the hope is that we can extend our winter harvest enough to bridge that gap between our last winter harvest and our first spring harvest, if you will. So we'll see. April can be a little bit tough because we're sort of at the end of the things. And we're not quite necessarily harvesting yet from our first plantings, but hopefully if there's a gap, it will be minimal so that we can make that produce available year-round.
Hey, Steve, I just want to throw something in, not really related, just related to gardening in general, and that is that one thing I noticed, I was looking at the garden space in my yard and all kinds of great little bulbs popping up in there. And it's nice to see. It's like the first signs of spring.
Yes, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. We've got a nice flash of yellow right outside our house here on the farm. Daffodils have come up, and I think a lot of bulbs are starting to come up, depending where you are. You know, there's even a difference between here in Woodbridge on top of the hill and then coming down into New Haven. You know, it was a few days ahead. So depending where you are in the state, you might have seen a lot of those bulbs, those daffodils starting to come up, maybe some narcissus. We'll start seeing some things soon. So the signs of spring are here. You know, I mentioned that the willows are always sort of the first for me that we see here, seeing them sort of swell up, and now they're just fully open. And the daffodils came afterwards. And so, yeah, it's nice to see those bulbs popping through.
And yeah, it's kind of a question about, we talked last time about, you know, preparing your raspberry bushes and blueberry bushes, two different strategies there. Apparently, as you mentioned, and also I've got information from Van Wilgen's nursery in, where is that, North Haven, I guess, that you really want to cut those raspberry canes all the way to the ground so that they, you know, new generation occurs. It seems so drastic to me, and I'm like, oh my God, should I really do this? So what I did, I mean, last year I did not do that, by the way. I cut off the maybe a third top portion of each of the canes of my two or three blueberry bushes, and they did quite well, you know, even though I didn't follow that, you know, prescription that you folks recommended. This year I said, well, let me experiment. So one of the bushes I cut to the ground and the other one I cut about halfway. And so I'm going to see what happens. But the reason I'm mentioning this is because I have a lot of wineberries on my turf, and they, you know, those canes tend to die off a lot. But many of them overwinter, and they stay red pretty much. You know, they look like they're pretty vibrant and vital all the way through the winter, and then they just tend to, you know, leaf out and produce fruit again. Do you have any clue as to what's going on with wineberries? I know a lot of people wonder what the heck they are, but they're almost like a weed. They're very, I guess you call them, maybe even invasive. But they produce a fantastic, wonderful raspberry-like fruit, which is pretty prolific in my area. Any information about wineberries, Steve?
I don't know much about wineberries. My understanding is that they are sort of considered an invasive, but sometimes invasives become endemic and have a useful role, as we've talked about before. You know, as we've heard about you know, their impact on pollinators and such. So I'm not sure. You know, I know the berries can be enjoyed, so that's a positive for them. But I don't know. I'll have to look into it.
Yeah. Well, it's just an interesting thing about how, you know, the raspberry canes, they turn into like dead wood, literally, or you can frankly blow them off the out of the ground. They're so fragile in the wintertime. The wineberries, on the other hand, they stay, you know, as I said, red and vital all the way through the winter, and then they just, you know, pick up where they left off in the fall. So it's just an interesting thought I had. All right, well, it is time. It is definitely time to bring in our special guest today, Caitlin Kimball, who is the Director of Agriculture at City Seed. Caitlin, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Well, we have, you know, big news here at WPKN because we're going to be joining you at the April 6th, I think it is, opening of the spring market at Worcester Square. WPKN will have a table, booth, or tent there to just, you know, be part of the action, to be able to talk to people, find out their stories, and all the people that come to that market, and maybe talk to even some of the vendors if we get a chance. But that's a special thing that we're going to try to do. But we'd like to hear about the markets. And as Steve mentioned, the transition between the winter market and the beginning of the spring market. But tell us a little bit about the history of City Seed, what its role is in supporting the farmers markets in New Haven, and you as Director of Agriculture, like, what are you up to?
Sure. So City Seed is celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. City Seed was founded in 2004. It started with the Worcester Square Farmers Market. So that farmers market was the first market in the state to accept SNAP benefits. And so we continue that today. We serve as one of the largest redemption sites in the state for SNAP. We have a partnership with End Hunger CT, and they help provide us with funding to match the value of SNAP, so to double SNAP for fresh fruits and vegetables. So, you know, we really fulfill that need for the New Haven community as well. We currently offer three farmers markets. So the Worcester Square Market is year-round. There's the winter market inside at the Conte West School. There are two more Saturdays of that. And then the market transitions outdoors from April through December in the school parking lot. We also have the Edgewood Park Farmers Market, which is on Sundays. That begins in May and runs through the end of November. Our newest market is the Q House Market on Dixwell Avenue, and that is on Wednesday afternoons at the historic Q House. And I guess the last thing, just to talk a little bit more about City Seed. City Seed has three programs now. It started in 2004 as just the farmers markets. We are still running our farmers markets. We also have the Sanctuary Kitchen program now, which is a culinary job training program for immigrant and refugee women. They make some delicious, delicious food. They do catering. They're at farmers markets. There's a lot of great stuff happening there. And then we also have our Incubates program, which provides it provides resources, seed funding, access to connections, access to our markets for mainly BIPOC, LGBTQ+ food businesses in New Haven. And we run what's called the Food Business Accelerator cohort annually, where we have a cohort of businesses that we mentor and help get them started as they venture out into the food world.
Fantastic. Steve, I know that you participate in I think the Edgewood, maybe all three markets.
Worcester Square, right?
Tell us a little bit about how Massaro Farm participates in those markets.
Yeah, we've been thrilled to be a partner with City Seed over the years. You know, when we started in 2010, we just, you know, asked if we could come to the occasional market. So we were, you know, a guest, and we filled in spots at Worcester Square and at Edgewood, and eventually became a regular at Edgewood and at Worcester. We've participated in the winter markets as we can over the years, and we've been really excited to be at the Q House Market since its inception a few years ago. So we'll be there throughout the season, and like I said, we'll be at the winter market for one more week, and we'll look forward to participating in the spring. But it's a great community of folks who attend the markets, and I think City Seeds does an incredible job with sort of the SNAP and WIC, as Caitlin mentioned, and it's been really important, I think, for all the growers, and having an organization on top of that and managing that has been really helpful.
Yeah, let's focus in a little bit about the role that City Seed and these farmers markets play, and all the other programs that you do, the community kitchen training program, that sort of thing. We want to hear more about that. But, I mean, what is the philosophy and the need that you're trying to meet in a city that could be described as, in some sections of at least, could be described as food deserts?
Yes, so we are a food justice nonprofit. So our core mission is really to create a local and just food system in New Haven. We, many New Haven residents are food insecure. So we really feel as if it is our duty to make fresh produce and fresh local food accessible for folks living in an urban area. Your income level, things like that should not prohibit you from eating fresh and local food. It is a barrier for many people, so we try to remove the financial barrier. We try to move the physical barrier so that folks can have access to that. And we really just try to complete the circle with all three of our programs. So, the farmers market provides fresh produce, fresh food from all these wonderful Connecticut farms and local businesses. In turn, Sanctuary Kitchen is participating at the farmers markets. Incubates Business Ventures are participating at the farmers markets. They're also using local food that they purchase from vendors. So we feel like it really just completes the cycle. And we've worked with so many farms and so many businesses over the years that have really blossomed. Maybe they just started out as a beginner with City Seed and now their businesses are flourishing. We've also been very fortunate to work with so many businesses over such a long period. We have, a farm, Starlight Gardens, that has been at the Worcester Market since its inception. It's been there for 20 years. Steve, you guys at Massaro have been with us for a very long time. We have so many vendors that have been with us for such a long time, and we're just so appreciative for their partnerships with us.
Can you give us some examples of some of these businesses that have blossomed, as you said, from the programs that you've done, the mentoring and hands-on learning programs that you've done? Are there literally some businesses that have grown out of those programs?
So every year for the incubates, FBA, there is a graduation. So those businesses do kind of, we still remain connected to them. They're in our network. We offer them resources and support, but there is a food business cohort graduation every year. And so, for example, there's a woman named Kismet Douglas who owns Mama Kiss Kitchen Cuisine. She was a part of our FBA program. She has been at the farmers markets for several years now. She routinely is selling out of her food at the markets. She has attended all three of our markets at various times. That's also helped her spread the word about her catering business, about her private chef business. So her business is an example of, growth and just expansion over the years with the help of City Seed and our customers.
Cool. Yeah, just, it's almost lunchtime. I'm wondering what kind of food does she make and sell at those markets?
A wide range of food. There's a little bit of a Caribbean influence. She uses a lot of proteins. She uses a lot of fresh vegetables from the markets. So it's a wide variety, but there is a Caribbean influence.
Cool. And let's focus in on the Dixwell Market, because as you said, the Q House Market, which is relatively new. What was the process to get that going, and how is it operating now? Like, and like, to what extent is the neighborhood there, which is mostly African American, what to what extent are they, you know, involved in appreciating it?
Yeah, so this, the Dixwell, the Q House Market on Dixwell will be in its third year this year. We are super excited about our partnership with Steve and Massaro being there as kind of our core farm. We are, you know, in the process of confirming our vendors for this year. We've worked really closely with the Q House staff, who is also celebrating their centennial year this year, their 100th anniversary. So our partnership with Leap and the Q House has been super helpful in getting the word out about the market. We also have partnered a lot with the Dixwell Community Management Team, and they have, again, really helped us promote the market and get the word out. The creation of that market was really centered around our mission, around food access and food justice. We think that all New Haven residents should have access to food, and so we really felt it was essential for us to, you know, expand and move our operations into that area, where we can meet the needs of people that are food insecure and people who maybe don't have access to fresh produce as easily as other parts of New Haven.
Yeah, and how do the folks in that neighborhood respond to this project? And, you know, is it really catching on? And, like, you get a sense that you're really fulfilling a need, as you say, that, you know, I know I lived in New Haven for 30 years, and there are a lot of places where you just can't buy fresh produce and really quality food. And so, like, how do people, you know, interact with the market there?
The response has been very positive. We're seeing more people attend from the community. We're working hard to partner with more community organizations to have events there. We've had a food business accelerator event there where we showcased all of our Incubates food businesses. That was very successful. Again, Leap has been extremely helpful in our work there. So we think it's going well. We're very excited for its third year this year. And yes, that market will be opening in June. We have the Worcester Square Market opening in 2 weeks on April 6th. We have the Edgewood Park Market opening on Sunday, May 5th. And then the Q House Market will open on Wednesday, June 12th.
Are you targeting any other neighborhoods for this kind of operation? Like, for example, Fairhaven?
We historically had a market in Fairhaven previously. We would love to have a market again in Fairhaven. I think that is something we're planning on for the future, potentially. We do partner a lot with Common Ground High School. Mm-hmm. They run a mobile market, and they have over 30 stops that happen in Fairhaven. So we partner with them. We help them connect with farmers that they can source produce from. And, yes, they are heavily involved in Fairhaven.
Let me just mention we're speaking with Caitlin Kimball, who is the Director of Agriculture at City Seed New Haven. And you can look at their website at cityseed.org, and it has all those markets mentioned and a whole lot of information about what the folks do there. Chris.
Sure. Caitlin, actually, and I was looking at your website this morning, it's pretty, you guys are pretty diverse. You're a lot about more than farmers markets. But actually, I want the last thing you were talking about, mobile delivery. So you said that Common Ground High School does something with bringing the farmers market to different parts of Fairhaven?
Yes. So they run a mobile market where they source produce from local farms. I believe that they source produce from Steve, sometimes from Massaro. And so they just have various drop-off points where people can come and purchase vegetables in Fairhaven.
Tell us a little bit about, or should I ask you, are you folks involved, is City Seed involved in any of the community gardens, which I think are flourishing around New Haven and in the environs? Do you participate in any of that, in developing those and, you know, mentoring people trying to get those going?
So we are not directly involved in a lot of the urban ag work with our daily operations. We are partners with You know, especially the folks at Gather and other groups like that, where we, you know, offer resources, we partner on projects. We met recently to kind of just discuss the upcoming year. But we are not ourselves really involved in urban agriculture in New Haven in that regard. We're not like building gardens or in that sense, but we consider Gather, you know, to be a partner of ours, and we love to support them in any way that we can.
Mention, if you could, a little more information about that organization and how people might reach them.
You can, I believe they're, I'm forgetting their exact website, but it's Gather New Haven. There's a lot of programming happening at Gather. I'm most familiar with their farm wellness program and their urban farming that they do. So they have a lot of programming where they do nutrition and cooking demos with the produce that they have. You can, you know, work at the farm as part of their wellness program. So City Seed is mainly involved with working with farmers from across the state. So we do work with a couple of urban growers in New Haven. We work with over 30 farms that are scattered throughout the state, a couple in New Haven County, but many farms are located in the more northern parts of the state.
Right. So now you're talking about the actual farms that are come to the bring their own produce to these markets in New Haven. Did you just say that actually 30 of them participate with your markets?
Yes, we work with over 30 farms annually that come to our markets. So especially at the Worcester Square Market, you know, what you can find at opening day and at all of our markets, you know, we have meat vendors, we have a dairy vendor, we have a wide range of vegetable vendors, mainly who are certified organic. We have we have mushroom cultivators. We have a lot of prepared food. We have knife sharpeners. We have a lot of BIPOC-owned food businesses, other food businesses. We have bakeries that we work with. There's really just a wide range of products that we offer, and I think that's what makes our market so valued and so attended by the public.
And I wanted also to focus a little bit more on the kind of training stuff you do to try to, you know, the initiating of business operations where people go through your training program, and then, as you said, they can wind up, you know, coming up with their own entrepreneurial track. Can you talk a little bit about that part of your program?
Sure. I am not the director of that program, but I can speak to it. The program is called the Incubates Program, and we mainly focus on offering a variety of support to food businesses just starting out. So we do a FBA cohort, a Food Business Accelerator cohort, where we have, I think it's about a dozen folks, give or take, annually, and you have to apply, you're admitted, and you go through a several months training where you receive various trainings. I have spoken at one of those sessions around sourcing local, about farmers, about being at the farmers markets. So we really just try to offer these businesses as much support as we can in kind of their jumping off point, and they also have a chance to vend at our farmers markets.
Steve, do you have anything you'd like to bring in here to Caitlin?
Well, I just say, you know, all the programs have been really helpful. I want to note the Sanctuary Kitchen program again, too, that it's been a great addition to the market, and it's incredible food that, you know, is available both at the market and for ordering weekly meals. And they're often, you know, timely with holidays, so there was, you know, specific menus for Ramadan and other occasions throughout the year, and for catering as well. So, you know, and the Food Business Accelerator programs and the businesses that City Seed has incubated have really, you know, contributed greatly to the diversity of the market and the products that are available. And then they're also sourcing from the farmers. So it's just been really great to see this grow. I think, as Caitlin put it, kind of bringing all these pieces together in the food scene in New Haven. It's been really nice.
Hi, for Kate and Steve. I'm sorry, Caitlin and Steve. I was just looking it up. So it's the for the Gather program. It's called GatherNewHaven.org. For anyone who wants more information about that.
And let's talk a little bit more about the sanctuary kitchen thing. I think that's a very fertile area for further exploration. Caitlin, how did that start and who does it serve?
That is a great question. I have been with City Seed for about a year and a half. I was not here when the program started, but I know that the origins of the program come from just a rich cultural diversity in New Haven, especially around immigrant and refugee women, and just the need to provide a space for that and to really provide job training and culinary training, you know, for these women to be a part of the food system in New Haven. So, you know, now the program has really blossomed. It, like Steve had said, Sanctuary Kitchen has a very large catering business. You're able to book Sanctuary Kitchen for an event and have them cook. It's delicious Middle Eastern food. The culinary training program, again, offers, you know, serve safe classes, offers more resources for just these women to be prepared to enter the workforce and to have culinary jobs. And several women from the Sanctuary Kitchen program have, you know, continued to work and to lead the organization and operations and being a chef and things like that. There are also women who have graduated, who have started their own food businesses. So I'm not as familiar with that program as the farmers markets, but I can speak to that. That is just, it's a really wonderful program, and it really just offers a lot of opportunity for New Haven, you know, to experience that food and that culture, but just as well for that community.
So those actually occur at the farmers markets, or do they, you know, have their own track where they're available, you know, between the markets?
So Sanctuary Kitchen has a weekly curbside order that you can order food if you subscribe. If you go online to the City Seed website, you can subscribe to the Sanctuary Kitchen newsletter, and there's a weekly menu that's sent out, and you can order to pick up. You can also have Sanctuary Kitchen cater food for an event that you have for your business or for your organization. The catering business has really blossomed over the last several years. Sanctuary Kitchen products can also be found at the store Time and Season, I believe. And then they are at the Madison Farmers Market when that begins in the summer, as well as at all three of the City Seed Farmers Markets. And so they will be there as well on opening day, the 20th anniversary of the Worcester Market on Saturday, April 6th.
And for people that know others who may want to, you know, participate in the Sanctuary Kitchen and that whole operation, which, as you said, functions not just to produce, you know, prepared food, but actually is a training program and a sort of a launch pad for people to have careers, get jobs, people that are, you know, tend to be to some degree at risk in, you know, having just arrived in this country as you said, refugees or immigrants. How might they pursue that?
If you go to the Sanctuary Kitchen part of the City Seed website, I believe there's a contact form there, and the program directors can guide you from there.
Wonderful. All right. And that's cityseed.org. We're speaking with Caitlin Kimball, who is the Director of Agriculture at City Seed, directing and helping us to understand all the wonderful resources available through that program. I want to remind you that WPKN will be at the opening of the spring market at, will that be indoor? That'll be outdoors, I think. Is that right, Caitlin, on that day, April 6th?
Yes, outdoors starting at 9 a.m. at the Conte West School in New Haven.
Right, so check the website for all the information you need to get to that. And come down and greet WPKN and participate in a wonderful market, fantastic way to meet hundreds of people from different communities coming together. This is the Organic Farm Stand coming down the home stretch here. I just want to get a little outro music going.
Thank you very much, Caitlin, for joining us.
It's been great
to have you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me. Yes, and thank you so much for participating in this event, and thank you, Steve, for everything that you do for the Connecticut farming community.
Thank you, Caitlin.
All right. Thanks, Steve Munno at Massaro Farm. Chris Ferriero right here in the studio. My name is Richard Hill. This has been the Organic Farm Stand. Join us again first Thursday of April.
What good is having wealth? Well, I can tell by the look in your eyes, baby. You need the one thing that I can prescribe. Organic love. 100% natural.
This is the Gaiagram, environmental headlines from around a planet in crisis.
The Financial Times reports that oceans marked 365 straight days of record-breaking global sea surface temperatures this week, fueling concerns among international scientists that climate change could push marine ecosystems beyond a tipping point. The consistent climb in temperatures reached a peak last week when the new all-time high was set for the past 12 months at just over 70 degrees. According to NOAA, the world's seas have yet to show any signs of dropping to typical seasonal temperatures, with daily records consecutively broken since they first went off the charts in mid-March last year. According to their state media, Vietnam faces nearly $3 billion a year in crop losses as more salt water seeps into arable land. The damage would likely center on the Mekong Delta region, known as Vietnam's Rice Bowl, because it provides food and livelihoods for tens of millions of people. In 2023, the U.S. added more solar capacity than ever before. This added capacity surpassed any other energy source in 2023, marking the first time a renewable energy source outpaced fossil fuels since World War II. The Inflation Reduction Act, along with the Biden administration's push for U.S. solar manufacturing, means these record-breaking years will hopefully be the year-after-year norm. According to the environmental website GRIST, California and Texas led the charge, with large utility-scale solar projects going online in 2023. With residential and commercial sectors also reaching new milestones, the solar energy industry had an all-around stellar year. In a joint statement, the government and major banks of South Korea have vowed to provide $313.4 billion in policy loans to finance projects to help reduce carbon emissions by 2030. State financial institutions will provide those loans to encourage companies to switch to low-carbon production. The plan to step up the fight against climate change was unveiled recently. In a study recently published in Earth's Future, despite climate change cranking up the heat across the United States, several eastern states have stayed curiously cool. It's a mystery that hasn't been fully solved, but now researchers think reforestation is partly responsible. Many of the lush forests that are currently growing in the eastern U.S. didn't exist two centuries ago. Many studies have examined how trees can mitigate climate change by storing carbon, but the new research underscores how forests can also provide a cooling presence. In the U.S. alone, tugboats produce an estimated 6 million tons of carbon pollution per year, the equivalent of more than a million cars on the road. That's why it's such good news that the port of San Diego's first fully electric tugboat just arrived. The 82-foot zero-emission E-Wolf is more powerful than any diesel-powered tugboat the port has today, and over a 10-year period will reduce the port's carbon emissions by about 3,100 tons. Colorado has instituted the most aggressive steps yet to limit water for urban landscaping. A bill signed into law this past Friday makes thirsty imported grasses a no-no in new road medians and other public places that rarely see human feet. Native grasses are okay. It is the state's most aggressive effort yet to curb water allocated to urban landscaping. And finally, it's time to start planning and start your seasonal garden. But before you buy your seeds, there's some very important information you must know. The USDA just updated their plant hardiness zone map for the first time since 2012, and there have been some major changes. According to the new map released in November 2023, about half of the United States has shifted to a new hardiness zone. That's really big news if you consider 80 million Americans use this map to decide on what and when to grow. Simply put, the types of plants that are able to grow successfully has changed for 50% of the country.
This was the Gaiagram, environmental headlines from around a planet in crisis.
WPKN programming is supported by Novamont, a Connecticut company, manufacturers of MatterBee, a family of completely biodegradable and compostable bioplastics, which are being used to provide low environmental impact solutions for everyday products. More information is available at materbi.com/en.
You're listening to WPKN Bridge.